From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm John Gatto. We continue now our discussion of how health care reform legislation will impact major providers in the La Crosse area. Our guests in this hour include Gunderson Lutheran CEO Dr. Jeff Thompson and Franciscan Skemp President and CEO Dr. Robert Nessie. They're responding to a local media panel, including Wisconsin Public Radio's Danielle Kading and La Crosse Tribune health reporter Terry Rinflish. Our moderator is Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Rysom. Already, our guests have talked about the likelihood that they may not receive more money from the government for the services they provide, and Dr. Nessie was asked how they're preparing to deal with a reimbursement status quo.
One model we're looking at is actually a more intense use of teams, actually putting more people on the problem early on. So let me take a Medicaid population, something that I know both Jeff and I are finding is increasing rapidly in our groups. Medicaid folks tend to have significant social problems. They have physical problems. They have addiction problems. They have mental health problems. So when they come into your system of care, it's not just the fact that they've shown up for a visit. It's the volume of services you need to provide to them to actually get them into a stable situation where you can continue to manage that case at lower costs. Bringing someone into the system with just a physician point of entry and then having them move throughout the system for many, many visits trying to get all the work done is quite expensive. Concept we're thinking about in terms of a continuing care model is to have them come into the system with a visit with a physician followed by, very likely, while this is all theoretic, we've only had about 10 weeks to work on it when you think about it, followed by a social work evaluation. What is the lifestyle situation? What is the stability in terms of their home, et cetera? Followed by a visit, as Jeff is already talking about here, with a care coordinator, a case manager, so that in the end of that first visit, instead of saying you've seen a physician, you have seen a team that have provided you with a care plan, which has been something nurses have done for decades. That care plan then can be followed by the team through the year and hopefully prevent duplicated work or wasteful work, while at the same time providing what the patient would perceive of as high-value care. That is one way in which providing differentiated resources early could save the system cost over time. Jeff already said it clearly, though. Unfortunately, right now, the payment system does not support that. In fact, if we did that, we would lose more money on the patient, even though the state would save more money long term. We need to change that system with a new payment model.
It's easier to see in, for example, a patient that needs a hip replacement. And you say, okay, here's a certain amount of money for a hip replacement. And it counts everybody. It counts the diagnostic exam in the beginning and the CT or the MRI and the surgeon and the anesthesiologist and the nurses in the hospital and the hospital and the rehab. And at a year out, if the patient's walking and doing well and has no pain, well, then there's a bonus. But if the patient had to come back into the hospital four times because you have a lot of knee infection problems or you kept doing lots of MRIs and CTs, you don't get any more money. But the outcome is judged on the well-being of the patient. In the face of this antiquated payment system, many places have still delivered outstanding care. It's one of the reasons why our area gets recognized. But when you take all the care given to Medicare patients between Gunderson and Franciscan Skemp, there is a remarkable efficiency and good quality that you don't see in the rest of the country. So we get recognized for delivering that level of care. But it's not that we're getting paid well for that. There are parts of the country who have poorer outcomes who get three times as much money into their system, into their communities, for having poorer outcomes. That is your tax money at work, by the way.
This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us are Dr. Jeff Thompson, he's the CEO of Gunderson Lutheran, and Dr. Rob Nessie, he's the CEO and president of Franciscan Skemp. We're talking about national health care reform. Our next question comes from Terry Rinflish with La Crosse Tribune.
Yeah, how optimistic are you? It seemed like during the discussions, the health reform discussions, that there was a whole side that wasn't really listening to efficient quality care and the payment system. How optimistic are you that that will actually play out sometime in the near future?
I'm pretty optimistic that payment reform is going to happen, because if it doesn't, then the costs will go up very rapidly. and that will force people to make some payment reform activities. You cannot just put this many people on to an insurance plan and think that you're going to manage it by so far limiting fees in the hospital. That is not going to work, and it will be too little for many budgets. There have been suggestions to manage expenses by adjusting fees. But if all you do is adjust the fees and you don't adjust utilization and you don't adjust how the system is organized, all you get is just a lot more of the same with a little lower fee. But year after year, now a couple decades worth, that has not worked, and the costs have risen rapidly. So I believe there will be serious attempts to alter it. There will be serious pilots where we can demonstrate what can be done. I think it'll be very difficult to get the pilots implemented, but I think, and frankly, I think right now it'd be impossible to get it implemented because there isn't the political will to go through all that right now. But I think the costs are going to keep rising, and so they're going to be forced to do something.
I agree with Jeff. In the absence of any sustainable business model for the current system, new business model will likely emerge. It just depends on how long it'll take and how painful it will be.
Any of your patients seen any effects of the health care reform legislation right now? I mean, locally?
Some.
I had that question asked for me. I said, I haven't seen any difference.
Well, sure. But yeah. if you had a child, I shouldn't say a child, if you had a young adult in your family who was under age 26, you would have already gotten a letter in the mail probably from your parents' employer saying that if you wish to continue on that insurance plan, you can do that. Also, if you are a small employer employing less than 25 people, I believe it is, you also got a letter regarding a voucher to support purchasing health insurance. And then the third is, if you're one of those unfortunate folks who are in that famous donut hole of Part D, you got a little cash from the government. I think that's happened already, and Jeff may know more.
I think that's really the largest number of the list. Children with pre-existing conditions are also immediately put on. And I think the lifetime caps that many places have had have also been taken off right away. But those are and most people are not going to feel that immediately. It certainly within institutions, you know, you're looking hard to try and figure out where you need to invest, what you need to do down the future to take care of your patients and your community, with so much of it a bit yet to be determined, it isn't really clear the way forward in regards to the bill. There are many things, though, we feel we can do regardless which way that goes in far improving care and lowering costs.
Do you have plans for the influx of new patients? Do you have, like, do you know approximately how many are going to come into your system so that you can plan for it? Or
we both have numbers, okay. And our plans right now are trying desperately to figure out how to actually accommodate the demand for care mm-hmm. with the old payment system and develop a new business model. But it is, for right now, it is, for us anyway, a very short-term response trying to figure this out because they showed up instantly.
And they showed up instantly, and many of these folks have not had good insurance for some time, and so there's a bit of a backlog of needs that they have. They're real needs, and so it is. It's important to get through that, to provide capacity for that, but figure out how to do it so efficiently that you don't shift any more costs than you have to onto the other payers.
When it comes to healthcare reform, there's a Gundersen-Lutheran health insurance plan, for instance, and Skemp plan. I guess what do these reforms mean for the health insurance plans you operate? And do you believe the reform is good or bad for businesses?
Obviously, speculating on the effect on insurance and the business community, you can also ask the folks in the large insurance companies in the business community. But I'll give you two thoughts on that. First of all, with the combination of demands of insurance companies, both short-term and long-term. The first is, in essence, an upper limit above which they can't charge for administrative fees. The mandatory care for folks with autism, the expanded and equity care for mental health, the lack of any way to limit who would enroll through an insurance exchange because of pre-existing illness, all, in my opinion, is going to need to lead to a very different business model for insurance. Because all the things I mentioned from the provider point of view and from a patient's point of view, they're good things. From a financial or business model point of view for insurance companies, it becomes challenging. From a business point of view, while I have heard quite a bit of talk and concern, real concern, about the penalties placed upon businesses for either high-cost insurance plans or for not insuring all of their folks and then paying a penalty to the government, I think the long-term issue for business to decide is, do they want to be in the insurance business at all? Or do they just want to contribute money to give their employees a voucher to go get their insurance somewhere else? I think probably the multi-million dollar question here is, are we going to see health insurance move the way for the retirement benefits did, from a defined benefit to defined contribution? I think the jury's out. But that would be something I would be watching with great care over coming years. And we'll see where Jeff goes with this. But it's an interesting question, deserves probably a whole term paper.
Well, I was always better at short stories than term papers, so I'll go with my short story. I think one thing to remember is that there are a lot of things that are written into the bill that don't go into effect until 2014. So some things are to be planned and to work on. And as Rob was saying, it's sometimes easy to fix some issues if you identify a bad guy, and then you can just say that's the problem. But actually, insurance has done wonderful things for people. Now, it's not like some insurance companies haven't behaved badly. Some have behaved badly. It's one of the nets our senior preferred program got caught up into. Our senior preferred plan is very popular with our seniors, does not cost the government anywhere near the amount of money that other programs around the country are, but because some of them behave badly, fraud and abuse, lots high charges, lots of bad things, they put a net over all of them and just decreased payments. So in a program that was already getting paid way less than national average, now we're getting paid even less, despite it being very popular and not having many complaints from our patients who are in the senior preferred program. So one of the problems is when you start looking at this, that people make a broad sweep and say those rotten insurance companies or those whatever. And in fact, there are some insurance companies that behave very admirably and work very hard to accomplish their mission of taking care of patients when they're in a crisis and have very high bills. And so they all aren't built the same. So I think, first of all, we have to pay attention to what we're expecting of them and then how they're behaving and kind of judge each one along the way. There is a good possibility that there can be good things for the business community, especially the smaller businesses. Many small businesses would like to have insurance benefits to help attract their employees, just like they originally set up a business-based insurance a long time ago. It is going to be much easier when you take large pools of employees. So think about it just for a minute here. If you're going to insure 10 people, you ask for a certain level of premiums based on how ill they might be and what they might spend. But with 10 people, one person that has a unexpected cancer or heart attack or a motor vehicle accident, all tragedies, could easily eliminate all the premiums that have been paid by the 10, and therefore the risk to the insurer goes very high. But if there are 10,000, you can predict among those 10,000, there'll be about this many that will have cancer or this many heart attacks or this many motor vehicle accidents. Then the insurer can say, okay, we need about this much money to cover all these people. Now, if we do those exchanges and then we couple that with healthcare organizations that are paid not for doing things, but for keeping people healthy and pay them for quality outcomes, well, now we have a chance to flatten out this rising healthcare cost curve. That is a model that I believe could be used to help change how healthcare is delivered and how it's paid for that would help the business community rather than increasing the burden on them, which they've been carrying pretty heavily for quite a long time.
How do you quantify, I guess, quality outcomes? There seems to be so many variables there, and how do you go about measuring something like that?
Well, I think it's unfair to ask a patient to measure the quality of their cardiac surgery procedure. I mean, they can say whether they lived or died. They can say how much pain they had. They can say how well they felt afterwards, I suppose. But they can't look at outcomes over large groups of people. They're a single patient and their experience. So they can judge their experience. How well did the system educate them? How well were they treated in their opinion? How well were they supported to help take care of themselves? There's things you could judge without being a scientist or a clinician. On the other side, we have better data, better information. If you don't have good information on your outcomes as a clinician, then you're not investing in something that you have an obligation to invest in. Gunderson Lutheran's done it. Marshfield's done it. Mayo, Cleveland, Intermountain, all these people have invested in electronic records, in systems to evaluate how well we're doing. It's one of the reasons why we often perform better. But you can look at that, and the insurance companies have large stacks of information. We need to organize their priorities right so it's used appropriately. But you can look at this information and say, how many infections and how many survivors and how long was the survival and what was the quality of the survival? And so it's you can't hide behind there's no information anymore. There's actually a lot of information.
For Mayo Clinic, quality or value isn't really for us just a concept. We believe that there is a value equation. The outcomes that you achieve, the safety of the environment you provide, plus the safety of the environment you provide for patients, their families, your employees, plus the service and access you provide over the cost over time for that care. That's the value equation. So if you break it down that way, for quality, the National Quality Foundation has metrics that are public. The Wisconsin Collaborative for Healthcare Quality, which Jeff and Gunderson were the pioneers of this. Franciscan Scamp was one of the founding members of it. That data is out there and is common within, I guess, about 80% plus of all of the providers in the state. Safety is actually quite well documented, more on the inpatient side, to be fair, but with the Joint Commission, which most hospitals are accredited by, having and other groups having 27 never events and what's your mortality, et cetera. Service would be, at least in Mayo's view, something perhaps as simple as a Net Promoter Score. What percentage of your patients rate you in your top box for good versus the percent that rate you in the bottom box for bad? Put that ratio together, that would be a Net Promoter Score, and then cost over time actually is the most difficult because we understand our fee schedules, we understand our fee for service, but the cost of a year of care, or cost of an episode of care, or a bundle of care is still something that has to be put together. Gunderson Lutheran, Mayo, others can do that. We need to have a reason for it, but the value index, which is in federal legislation, is going to come around somewhere within that value equation that I just described, and that would be good for high-value groups like the groups here in the Midwest and Gunderson and Mayo.
One last question, and I'm wondering, is there something that's lacking now that hopefully will be brought in the future?
I would like to see in the next health reform bill, whatever the outcome of the Institute of Medicine study on the fix for geographic variation in Medicare payment, to be embedded and put a little more justice in the Medicare payment based on high-value outcomes by good, hardworking groups versus by what county that care is delivered in. I think that, in the end, should be in legislation, not just subject to further study.
I think the best thing that could be done would be to take the language of the Institute of Medicine will study, or the secretary shall work on this and move it to by this date and this time, there will be a payment system that pays for outcomes, pays for value. That is pays for what is valued by the population. Good outcomes, good service, all those things, access to care. If we can move to a point and put everybody on notice, this is where we're going. You have to have data. You have to be able to know what your patients are saying about you. You will not get paid unless you can demonstrate a certain level of quality and service. I think putting that as a stake in the ground and saying this is where we're going to be by this time would be a very powerful tool to move along those parts of the organization. And frankly, give encouragement to organizations like ours who spend a lot of money and effort now in setting up programs that deliver better care for the population, but there's no payment for, and come out of the hides of other parts of the organization. So just put that stake in the ground and say, we're going to pay for outcomes. We're going to pay for quality. And that then results in people getting a certain amount of quality for what you're going to get paid for. Now we're back to the value equation. We're going to pay for that.
Dr. Jeff Thompson, CEO of Gunderson Lutheran, and the president and CEO of Franciscan Skemp, Dr. Robert Nessy, joining us in our studios earlier this week to respond to questions from a local media panel, including La Crosse Tribune Health reporter Terry Rinflish, Wisconsin Public Radio's Danielle Kading, and WPR's Steve Rysom, who also served as the moderator for this conversation on some of the anticipated outcomes related to the recently passed federal legislation on health care reform in the United States. And for this week, that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. Our production team includes Steve Rysom, Danielle Kading, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers, we invite you to visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse and follow the links to our producers and reporting staff, and send us your emails. We'd appreciate hearing from you. Again, the address, wpr.org/lacrosse. Next time on Newsmakers, in the second of this two-part special series, we broaden the conversation and consider the impact of healthcare reform on individuals and other area healthcare services, including a perspective on what it might mean for the St. Clair Health Mission, the largest free clinic in the area.
The goal has always been to shut the free clinic down. But, you know, the anticipation is there are still going to be people that are going to fall between the cracks.
We'll also get reaction to the plan from the AARP, and we'll talk about what healthcare reform means for efforts to form a regional cooperative to lower the cost of health insurance. That's next week on Newsmakers, Thursday at 5 on Ideas 90.3 WHLA.